And tonight, our main speaker is Kevin.
Thank you very much. My name is Kevin Heaney. I'm an alcoholic. I was so high for the last 2 days getting ready to come here. Tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock, I fly to California. I'll be having lunch with the ultimate hippie, Wavy Gravy, who, if any of you are old enough, was the man who pulled Woodstock together. I will be going to a men's retreat down the Pacific coast for the weekend. I'll be speaking at a men's meeting tomorrow night. But the thrill of being here made New York subway the most perfect place in the world. And as I looked in the eyes of the people around me, what I didn't see, but what I see in this room, is the joy of living, which is available, which is not a contact high. But I have to work very hard because my ego regrows quickly. I want to thank the chair for inviting me to be here tonight. I want to thank Peggy and those who went before for creating what is a hotbed of enthusiasm, what is a rock-solid place. As you may or may not know, the group is not held high regard in certain parts of the city. Were it not the Atlantic group, I would use an F word followed by them. But I've been briefed by Busy about how I should speak from here, so I shan't say that. Living well is the only revenge. And if living well was not a byproduct of the meetings, the sponsorship, and the program, the room should be empty. But we're proof. So I'm Kevin. I began drinking in eighth grade. I drank till I was 29. Rob said if love was enough. Love is enough to stop, but I have to open my heart to let the love in. And it's not human love, it's divine love. But what lets, I'm so defended against letting that love in that it takes being so deeply punched that the wind's blown out of me, and as I suck in, I allow some of that divine love to come in. In order to not be an alcoholic, which I was, and I knew that because my first internship out of Columbia was at a drug and alcohol place in Connecticut, so I knew what alcoholism was, and I knew I was it, and I built this incredible recipe for denial. And it was that I ran 3 miles a day, 5 times a week. I swam 1 mile a day, 7 times a week. I played squash 5 to 15 times a week. I ate brown rice, tofu, raw vegetables. I drank cranberry juice. I had 3 different forms of meditation and the Catholic rosary beads, though I was an atheist since the age of 12, when I discovered something below my belt that wasn't a rosary bead. And I was on the couch 2 times a week in good psychotherapy. I wanted to not be what I was because I wanted to keep drinking because I desperately couldn't imagine a life without alcohol. What's the point? Just shoot me is where I was. And so I did all of this and I would stop periodically and stay sober. Not sober, I wasn't drinking. And I was ugly and I was unhappy. And one day in 1982, I inhaled to create a cover story, and I had my spiritual awakening. And it wasn't seeing Jesus in front of the sands shaking Frank Sinatra's hands, and it wasn't the Buddha at Bloomingdale's at Christmas. What it was I realized any word you say, Kevin, is a lie. If you say you're going to stop, if you say you're going to cut down, if you say you're going to change, which I'd been saying for years, I knew was a lie. And I was silent. And a day later, someone came into my office and said, "You look horrible." And I started to explain all of my issues, See, I was in therapy twice a week, so my issues were very immediately accessible. And they were all real issues. And I ended with, and I think I'm drinking a little too much. And Rachel said, remember when I went away in February? And I said, yes, you went sailing in Barbados. And she pulled her sleeves up and said, I didn't go to Barbados. I went to Metropolitan Hospital. I was locked down for a week. And she showed me gashes from her wrist to her elbow on both arms with Frankenstein stitches that closed them. She said, I tried to kill myself when I was drunk. She held her arms out to me like Christ on the cross, and she said, will you go to a meeting with me tonight? I say the same things again because it's my story. The writer Kurt Vonnegut said, unusual travel plans are dancing lessons from God. God was asking me to step out on the floor. I had a million excuses for why I couldn't go. I kept an incredibly busy social schedule between swimming, sailing, yachting, and those sorts of things, and drinking nonstop. I had nothing to do that night. I went to the Rhinelander group. We walked up Madison. I remember passing one of those fancy little boutique stores where they charge you $50 for an olive. And they had a big sign in the window, limes and lemons are on sale. And I turned to Rachel and I said, that's fruit I will never need again. And by the grace of God, since the 13th day of June in 1982, I have not drunk. But because I'm a willful F, again, that word is not being used, I didn't catch it or it wasn't said clearly enough, so let me say it very clearly to you. I didn't drink, but I periodically resorted to the marijuana maintenance program and Coke if it was freely offered. It took till November the 7th for the message to come through, and I'm going to AA nonstop now. So let me tell you the bad news. And if your sponsor hasn't told you this, they can call me and apologize. If you can sniff it, snort it, shove it up, shoot it up without a bona fide doctor's prescription, your day counts zero. We play hardball. Because that night when I realized the truth, a little grass and a little Coke made me think just one Courvoisier or one single malt scotch before the night's over. I want to return to drinking, but I'll use something else in the meantime. So my day count, I started in June, and it's a wonderful thing, but it really got much more real in November. 2 years later, I want to kill myself because I've gotten the job I wanted on Wall Street, which meant nothing to me, left a career which did matter because I was driven by defects. And I was now in AA, and I wasn't happy, and I didn't know where the promises were, and I didn't have a lot of them because I wasn't doing the work. And I met a man, his name was Keith. He would die of AIDS 3 years later, but before he did, he taught me the big book is our program. And Keith was very specific and very exacting, as the program is. So let me give you an English major's lesson in linguistics, which is real important. The program is what is contained in this book, which is the 12 steps. The fellowship is everything else. The meetings, the telephone, the coffee, the sponsorship, the sponsee, the baseball outings the Atlantic Group will hold, but that's the fellowship. In order to have an essential psychic change, which is what a drunk like me has to have, I've got to work the steps. And when I don't, I may not be drinking, but I am not sober. Chuck Chamberlain, a great AA's definition of sobriety was physical abstinence plus the ability to be comfortably and at peace with myself, with you, and the God of my understanding. It says incredibly clearly in the book that if I'm fighting anyone or anything, I'm insane and out of conscious contact with God. That doesn't mean I have to have no political views, support atrocities. It means not fighting it. That there's one power, and that is the higher power, whatever that means to you. And that's where I worship. That's where I'm fed from. That's where I'm supported. So I'm going to talk about my failures, but first, tomorrow in California, I will see my dear old friend Rick Kay, and we've been sober a long time. And Rick reminds me, Kevin, you always talk about the negatives. No one knows your life is good. So before I get to what didn't work in AA, which is me not working AA, let me tell you, I have a marriage of 22 years that is better than I could have imagined because I've changed. As Rob said, the circumstances are not what needs to change. My attitude, my insides. I have a career which has blossomed beyond my wildest dreams. It is thriving to a point that it scares me to death. I did not do this. I did not make myself sober. I do not build a marriage. I'm a channel. I let God work through me. I of mine own self, as Jesus of Nazareth said, can do nothing. The Father within doeth the works. Spirit is what empowers me. Because left to my own devices, I want to lust, I want to anger, I want to do nothing and get rewarded handsomely for it. And I'd like to drink and smoke Camel cigarettes. I still miss them so much. So Keith taught me that there are 12 steps, that there are 197 promises in the book. But AA works like the bank robber's note. Do what I say, and nobody gets hurt. Nobody, meaning me and you. And as Warren's dead, so I'll use his last name, Higginbotham out of the Lenox Hill Group once said to me, Kevin, you're willful. He used a word I can't use. And it's true. Every instance I want to take my will back. And when I do, God doesn't move, I move. And heaven and hell have the same address. It's my skull, and I plummet back in. I drank to feel peace. I drank to feel enough. I feel enough when I know I'm not enough. I fall on my knees in these rooms, ask your help, follow your directions, and do these things. I want to be real clear. This is going to be obnoxious, but what the hell? And if you don't like it, next week Clancy will heat it up more, and Debbie Davis is coming the week after that, so you better find something else for Tuesday nights if you don't like it this way, because the month of March is owned by sobriety and excellence. The fellowship, like the kingdom of God, is all-inclusive, never exclusive. But the program is ferocious, exact and specific. I do these things, I get these rewards. I don't do these things, and I don't. No matter how drunk I got, I woke up sober. Or at least by noon, I was sober. No matter how spiritual I am, I wake up an atheist and have to start over again. It's not unfair, that's just the way it is. I must invite higher power in. I must undertake the activities. The physical body, 48 hours after you leave the gym, reverts back to its flabby state. The soul does too. The fellowship says, just come, that's good enough. But it says on 25, in order to successfully consummate the process, I must confess my defects. I must own this thing. I must do this work. And then I get to experience life different than I ever imagined. Though I'm on the same number one train, passing the same stations. We're promised everything. Ironically, I sat in this very sacred space years ago before you guys got here, and a sponsee's Hindu teacher was here. And the Hindu teacher confronted the crowd and said, God says to you, give me what you have, which is nothing. And I will give you what I have, which is everything. Why does no one take him up on it? And it's the truth. I cling to my misery. I cling to my pain. I cling to my identity. I have to have a psychic change. There's a great AA slogan, I see things differently. And that, to my mind, is the quintessence of psychic change. I stop seeing myself as a victim, and I stop seeing myself as the most naughty boy in the world. I see myself as a human being. The book tells me I'm to claim progress, not perfection. But in order to claim progress, I've got to do things and keep doing things. I've got this life that's incredible, and yet my mind clouds over and I buy the lie that it's not enough. I'm now 63. I have a sponsee being treated for cancer. There have been a number of suicides in the world I live in. Death is much closer. The disco days are behind me. Unless I want to look like some lame ass who's trying to do something he can no longer do. I can't face this world on my own. I need you. I need your help. I need your wisdom, and I need to be part of your lives. And I need a higher power. I need an intimate relationship. I have a sponsee named Dayton, and I've mentioned this over and over, but it's so important. Dayton would email me his morning guidance, and the phrase, God will provide, appeared over and over. And it took me 2 years to realize what I was reading, and then to realize I didn't believe it for 1 second. And that was a measure of how insecure I was, how uncomfortable I was, and how hard life was. So if you're brand new, you got every reason to think we're whack jobs and we're psychopaths and this is a cult. I've got 32 years of back-to-back, day-after-day miracles. I got no reason to think anything else except God has provided, is providing today, and will provide tomorrow. But my alcoholism, which Clancy will tell you is a disease of perception, says, oh no, this is different. It stops now. You're on your own, kid. It's a lie that I don't ask for, and it just grows. It's a weed, a poisonous weed. It's a tumor. And I need a psychic change. Rachel used the word healing. AA is a healing. AA is to know that there's no power except the one power which is in our hearts. The book tells us that. I've got to find it. My first sponsor, Sparky, God rest his soul, used to say, if God seems distant, who moved? I move. I turn my back at the drop of a hat. I don't mean to, and sometimes I do mean to, but I do it. So the AA program gives great rewards, but I have to do the work. And the work I did last year, last week, yesterday doesn't count. I've got to surrender. I'm a hopeless failure, a doomed and hopeless alcoholic, as Silkworth lays out. But there is hope for someone like me if I give myself to this thing. And yet, my mind says that's enough. My mind doesn't believe. I have to forgive myself. There's so many lines in the big book, but at the end of Bill's story, he talks about the man who hangs himself in the place in Brooklyn. And it's a line out of the big book, which I think is so terribly important. It says he could not or would not see our way of life. And I don't know if someone can't see AA's glory or won't, chooses to. And there are times I just can't help myself. I think we need to have a soft, compassionate heart because it's so hard. Most people will die. I had someone come to my office last week, and most people, I'm a therapist, most people will say AA doesn't work. Statistically, they can't keep statistics. It's just this myth that's been propagated, you know, and I sit in this room and look at all your faces and, you know, I don't get into the debate. But she said something worse, the deeper lie, which is it won't work for me. And it's a terrible thing. So I get these emails from a psychiatrist who's in our deal in Louisiana, and one came this week, which I've been reading over and over. It's from Bill Wilson, and it says, about this slip business, I would not be too discouraged. I think you're suffering a great deal from needless guilt. For some reason or other, the Lord has laid out a tougher path for some of us, and I guess you're treading one of them. God is not asking us to be successful. He is asking us only to try to be. That surely you are doing and have been doing. So I would not stay away from AA through feeling of discouragement or shame. It's just the place you should be. Why don't you just try to be a member You don't have to carry the whole of AA on your back. It's not always the quantity of good things that you do, it's also the quality that counts. I have to go forward with God's not asking me to be successful, it's asking me to try. No matter how hard it seems, no matter how much of a failure, it's to try. In the chapter, We Agnostics, it reveals the secret of finding higher power. It's to seek, to keep seeking, to keep looking, because it's in here, and it can be felt, and it doesn't matter if it goes away. If you're new, and I'm not talking enough about booze and throwing up on my girlfriend and hangovers, I'm sorry. I really mean it, because if I'm not giving you something to identify with, I apologize. But this is what I got to talk about. This is available to us. So putting in a plug for the Atlantic Group's Big Book Study, which will take place at the Wilson House in September, I will be there, but there'll be much better speakers leading it. So why don't we all go to Vermont and find God on our knees then and there? Or better yet, why wait? If you're not feeling that this spiritual stuff is a reality, if it's just some white whale out of literature, some myth, then you need to grab your sponsor and say, we got to go at this again. So I do a Big Book study. And a week ago, I was sitting in the middle of the study. Keith taught me AA through a Big Book study. And this is the 55th one of these I've done. And I looked around the room and I realized, I have no idea of what this is about. I have no idea how I'm sober this long. I am such a goose. I have no clue. I started working with a sponsor 2 years ago, and she is so brilliant, not brilliant, so effective at helping me find the God of my understanding in this day by getting the defect out of the way. If you're not feeling it, then insist on trying it again. Go back in again. Go back in harder. The answer is here. The answer is here. We're meant to live great lives. Man is not meant to cry. Woman is not meant to suffer. It's in my head. I need that psychic change, and it's possible. Yesterday was the 10th anniversary of the death of Van, one of the co-founders of the meeting. Van would talk about giving 110% with no expectation of return. He would say the reward is that you got to give. It's not barter, Chuck Chamberlain would say of love. There are many hands that keep this meeting in place. But Van's inspiration, and Peggy, and Bill B., and Brian, and who am I? Norman. This is here for us. We're to enjoy it. This is not a forced march. And if it is, you got it wrong. Please, it's about a great life now. There's no afterlife in AA. There's no heaven talked about. It's now. But the question is, am I surrendered now? Brian, I don't know if his tapes are still around, but he had a gift of lightness and laughter. This is, if I'm too serious, forgive me. But laughter is really what this is about. Laughing that this thing is not real. It's a scary ghost that's a sheet hanging off a chair in a kid's bedroom. There's no power to the disease. There's no power to the hatred if I'm united with my higher power in this moment. I can handle it. There was a Catholic priest, chaplain for the fire department, who died at 9/11. I can't think of his name. Shout it out if you remember. Father Michael J. And he used to say at meetings, you can drop an atom bomb on my head and I'll be fine because of AA. And his picture can be seen when they carried his body out. There was a smile on his face that few of us experience with or without the drug, sex, and alcohol. It was peace. That's what AA offers. If that's not what you're getting, get busy. Bill Baldwin used to say to me, Kevin, you're an effed up alcoholic. The answer to all of your problems is 110% immersion in AA, in the program, in the fellowship, in service, in being a sponsor, in being a sponsee. Or as Chuck Chamberlain would say, get lost in life and wake up in God. This is heaven. And if it's not feeling that way, When I've refused AA, I get suicidal. 3 years ago, with my new office and my new practice, time and time again, I got so frightened I thought about throwing myself through the window 11 floors up. My solution is drink or kill myself. What I didn't do was get on my knees as soon as the patient left the room and say, God, remove this. 10 years before that, I found myself, after 10 months of trying to change an employee's behavior, discontented and unhappy. And my solution was I woke up in the middle of the night, went to the kitchen drawer, pulled out one of the expensive German knives, and held it to my chest. Bill Baldwin would say, Kevin, it's egocide or suicide. I'm not being bleak. That's the reality for me. I'm a doomed and hopeless alcoholic who, by God's grace, the kindness of you people, and certain actions I've taken, can say to you, it has not been necessary to drink or drug since the 7th day of November in 1982. And I have experienced great joy, not as much as God wanted, because I keep refusing the joy going to the self-will. But it was God's plan for me to be happy, joyous, and free. I just reverted to the selfish, self-centered, and self-seeking. I hope I didn't waste your time. AA works.